with a V. It's most urgent. He tried to push forward. The first guard sidestepped neatly and pushed him sharply in the chest.
No one is going nowhere, he said. Orders of the king, see?
Lance Constable Carrot, I want you to charge these men, said Vimes. Carrot saluted.
Very good, sir,
he said, and turned and trotted smartly back the way they'd come. Hey! Shouted Vimes as the boy disappeared around a corner.
That's what I like to see, said the first guard, leaning on his spear. That's a young man with initiative, that young man. Very sensible, said the other guard.
There was a long, terrifying ululation. Vimes was amazed to realise it wasn't coming from him. Carrot appeared around the corner at a dead run. He had a felling axe in either hand. His huge leather sandals flapped on the cobblestones as he bounded closer, accelerating all the time. And all the time there was this cry.
Dee-da, dee-da, dee-da.
The two palace guards stood rigid with astonishment.
I should duck if I was you, said Vimes from near ground level.
The two axes left Carrot's hands and whirred through the air. One of them hit the palace gate, burying half the head in the woodwork. The other one hit the shaft of the first one and split it. Then Carrot arrived.
What are they accused of, sir?
Said Carrot eventually, holding one limp body in either hand.
Assaulting an officer of the watch in the execution of his duty.
Under section V11 of the Public Order Act of 1457,
said Carrot.
Yeah, said Vimes solemnly. Yeah. Yeah. I suppose so.
Lupine Watts glared up red-eyed from the heap of paperwork on his desk.
Good of you to see us, said Vimes, appearing in the doorway.
Watts glared at him. Since you're here, he said. Vimes dropped his helmet on Watts's desk and sat down.
Take a seat, said Watts. The dragon is back, said Vimes.
Watts stared at him for a while. Vimes stared back.
I saw it, said Vimes flatly.
A dragon? You're sure? Vimes leant across the desk. No, I could be bloody mistaken, he shouted. It may have been something else with sodding great big claws, huge leathery wings and hot fiery breath. But we all saw it killed, said Watts.
I don't know what we saw, said Vimes, but I know what I saw.
He was suddenly feeling extremely tired. Anyway, he said, it's flamed a house in Bitwash Street, just like the other ones.
Any of them get out?
Vimes put his head in his hands. Any of them get...
Any of who? He said. The people in the house, of course, said Watts.
Oh. Oh, yeah. It wasn't like a normal house. I think it was some sort of secret society thing, Vimes managed. Something was clicking in his mind, but he was too tired to examine it.
Magic, you mean?
Dunno, said Vimes. Could be. Guys in robes.
You don't think you've been overdoing it, do you? Said Watts.
Vimes slumped forward.
Bring you a nice cup of tea, Captain, said Sergeant Colon, and a figgin.
Vimes looked at him blankly.
You've been asleep, said Sergeant Colon helpfully. You were spark out when Carrot brought you back.
Vimes looked around at the now familiar surroundings of the yard.
Ah, he said. Me and Nobby have been doing some detectorin', said Colon. You know that house that got melted? Well, no one lives there. It's just rooms that get hired out. There's three societies use it.
He extracted his notebook.
To wit, viz, the Ankh-Morpork Fine Art Appreciation Society, hem hem, the Morpork Folk Dance and Song Club, and the Elucidated Brethren of the Ebon Knight.
Why, hem hem, said Vimes.
Well, you know, fine art. Just men painting pictures of young women in the nud. The all together, explained Colon the connoisseur. As for the folk dance people, well, no problem there. You know you always wondered what Corporal Nobbs does on his evenings off?
No, said Vimes incredulously.
Not Nobby.
Yep,
said Colon, delighted at the result.
What, jumping about with bells on and waving his hanky in the air?
Yep,
Nobby? Mr. Steel Toe Caps in the groin?
Yep, funny old world, ain't it?
Anyway, the caretaker said the Elucidated Brethren have been meeting a lot lately.
What did you do with our suspect? Said Vimes.
Well, said Colon awkwardly, he kept on shivering sort of thing and groaning on about dragons and that, and then he jumps up and runs out of the door for no reason at all.
Vimes glanced at the sergeant's big, open, dishonest face. No reason? He prompted.
Well, we decided to have a bite. Errol ate the pizza, so I sent Nobby out to the baker's, see, and, well, when Nobby asked the prisoner if he wanted his figgin toasted, he just gave a scream and ran off.
Hmm. Vimes glanced out of the window. He stared up into the heavy rolling clouds. What time's the coronation, Sergeant? He said.
Noon, sir. And Mr. Wants has sent a message about how you're to be in your best armour among all the civic leaders, sir.
Oh, has he?
And Sergeant Hummock and the day squad will be lining the route, sir.
It's up there, Sergeant, said Vimes. I can practically smell it.
Yes, sir, said Colon obediently.
So be damned to any lining of the route. I want you three up on roofs, understand, up high. When it makes its move, I want us to be the first to know. The librarian knew where he was now. He was at home. He was home a week ago. The Summoning of Dragons. Single copy, first edition, slightly foxed and extremely dragoned. It was a page a little back from the burnt section that drew the librarian's eye. He sat and stared at it for some time. Then he stared at the darkness. Somewhere out there a thief was heading for this place, to steal this book. And then someone would read this book, read these words, and do it anyway. His hands itched. All he had to do was hide the book. He stared into the darkness again. But that would be interfering with the course of history. Later, he followed the hooded thief when it came out of the library clutching the book, and waited near the dread portal in the rain until the Elucidated Brethren had met, and when the last one left, followed him to his home, and murmured to himself in anthropoid surprise. By mid-morning the streets were packed. The fog didn't lift, but it did thin a bit. Vimes was seated between the Master of the Fellowship of Beggars and the head of the Teachers' Guild. Up on the dais, the High Priest of Blind Dio, who last night had won the right to crown the king, fussed over his preparations. By the small portable sacrificial altar, a tethered billy goat was peacefully chewing the cud and possibly thinking in goat, "What a lucky billy goat I am. This is going to be something to tell the kids." A distant cheering suggested that the ceremonial procession was on its way. Across the square, amongst the ranks of Unc Morpork's faded aristocracy, Lady Ramkin's face tilted upwards. Vimes shifted in his seat and glared at the haze over the river, and saw wings.
"You idiot!"
"Sorry," said Vimes. "Sorry." Wants was white with fury.
"How could you have been so stupid?" he raged, shouting out like that.
"I thought I saw," Vimes began.
"It was a raven!"
"Look, I said I'm sorry. It was an honest mistake.
I've had to hold up the procession and everything."
Vimes said nothing. Wants's eyes narrowed.
"Give me your badge."
"My badge?"
"That's what I said."
Vimes looked at him in astonishment. "But it's my badge."
"And you're going to give it to me," said Wants grimly, "by order of the king."
"What do you mean?" "He doesn't even know." Wants scowled.
"But he will," he said.
Vimes slowly unclipped the verdigris disc of copper and then tossed it to Wants without a word. He turned and stalked off through the crowd. Sergeant Colon hauled himself onto the parapet around the Temple of Small Gods. "Anyone human still appear?" he whispered. Carrot's voice sounded dead and featureless in the dull air. "Here I am, Sergeant," he said. Colon joined him. "Just checking you were not et," he said, trying to grin. "I haven't been et," said Carrot. "Oh," said Colon. "Good, then."
"Everything all okay?"
Nobby's muffled voice sidled its way through the thick air.
"Yes, Corporal," said Carrot.
"Heard the procession go by,"
Nobby observed. Colon filled his pipe and struck a match on the stone beside him.
"If that dragon's alive," he said, "then it'll have got the hell away from here, I'm telling you."
"Wind's getting up,"
Nobby observed.
"If I could fly, I wouldn't be sitting on a roof on some manky old statue. If I could fly, I'd..."
"What statue?" said Nobby.
"This one," said Colon, thumping the stone. "You know, there's hundreds of mouldy old statues up on small gods, Nobby."
"No, I don't," said Nobby. "They were all taken down last month when they re-leaded the roof."
In the damp silence that followed, Sergeant Colon looked down at the stone he was sitting on. It had a taper, and a scaly pattern, and a sort of indefinable tail-like quality. Then he followed its length up and into the rapidly thinning fog. On the dome of small gods, the dragon raised its head, yawned, and unfolded its wings. The unfolding seemed to go on for some time. Then, with wings outstretched, the dragon yawned, took a few steps to the edge of the roof, and launched itself into the air. After a while, Carrot hauled himself back onto the roof and pulled the other two up behind him.
"And we better warn the people," he panted.
"I don't think we need bother," Colon said. "I think they'll soon find out."
The High Priest of Blindio was stumbling over his words. There'd never been an official coronation service in Ankh-Morpork.
"Get on with it,"
Wants hissed from his position behind the throne.
"All in good time," the High Priest hissed back. "You might try to show a little respect."
"Of course I'm showing respect. Now get on."
There was a shout off to the right. Wants glared into the crowd.
"It's that Ramkin woman," he said. "What's she up to?"
People around her were chattering excitedly and pointing. Wants looked along the wide street of small gods. It wasn't a raven out there. Not this time. Errol stirred sluggishly in his box, raised his head, and whined.
"What's the matter, boy?" said Vimes, reaching down. "Upset stomach?"
The little dragon's skin was moving as though heavy industry was being carried on inside.
"We really haven't looked after you very well, have we?" said Vimes.
Vimes became slowly aware that the distant cheering had turned to screams. He stared vaguely at Errol, and then smiled an incredibly evil smile, and stood up. He placed his battered helmet on his head and gave it a jaunty tap. Then, humming a mad little tune, he sauntered out of the building. In the square, a voice immediately above Vimes rumbled,
"I still swear it's a magnificent specimen."
Vimes' gaze travelled upwards until it crested the edge of the fountain's top bowl.
"Have you noticed," said Sybil Ramkin, hauling herself upright and dropping down in front of him, "how every time we meet, a dragon turns up?"
She gave him an arch smile. The High Priest of Blindio staggered to his feet. He was still holding the ersatz crown in one hand. Vimes watched the old man look upwards into a couple of glowing red eyes a few feet away.
"Oh, no," hissed Lady Ramkin. "The silly old fool is giving it the crown. Dragons have such sensitive mouths."
The great dragon blinked at the tiny circle of gold. Then, with extreme delicacy, it extended 1-meter-long claw and hooked the thing out of the priest's trembling fingers.
"What do you mean, sensitive?" said Vimes.
"A really incredible sense of taste."
"You mean it can probably taste gold?"
whispered Vimes, watching the crown being carefully licked.
"Oh, certainly. And smell it."
Vimes wondered what the chances were of the crown being made of gold. Not high, he decided. The dragon removed the claw from its mouth in one graceful movement, and caught the priest, who was just sneaking away, a blow which knocked him high into the air. When he was screaming at the top of the ark, the great mouth came around and...
"Gosh!" said Lady Ramkin. "The temperature of the thing," said Vimes. "I mean, nothing left. Just a wisp of smoke."
There was another movement in the rubble. Another figure pulled itself upright. It was Lupine Once, under a coating of soot. Once broke into a run. He made it halfway across the square before the dragon darted forward and snatched him up. It appeared to examine him for some time, turning him this way and that. Then, moving on its three free legs, it trotted away across the plaza and headed towards the palace. Vimes started to laugh. Vivat Draco. Something major was happening in the palace. There was the occasional crash of a floor or a thump of a falling ceiling. In his rat-filled dungeon, behind a door with more locks than a major canal network, the patrician of Ankh-Morpork lay back and grinned in the darkness. The civic leaders of Ankh-Morpork the next morning each received a short note bidding them to be at the palace for a working lunch by order. It didn't say whose order, or they noted whose lunch. Now they were assembled in the antechamber. Finally, a couple of very worried-looking servants opened the doors to the main hall. Lupine Once lurched through. His face was the colour of a fermented dishcloth.
"Ah," he intoned. "Good. Are you all here? Then perhaps you would step this way, gentlemen."
Said the head thief. "The note mentioned lunch."
"Yes," said Once.
"With a dragon?"
"Good grief! You don't think it would eat you, do you?" said Once. "What an idea!"
"Never crossed my mind," said the head thief. "Ha ha! No, I expect you're all far too stringy," said Once. "So, if you would kindly step this way."
The great hall had changed. For one thing, it was a great deal greater. The floor was a mass of rubble, except in the middle of the room, which was a heap of gold. Well, goldish. Sparkly stuff. The councillors were not in a position to pay much attention to this, however, because of what was hanging above their heads. It looked like the biggest badly rolled cigar in the universe. Two talons could be dimly seen gripping the dark rafters. Once took a seat at the head of the table.
"Please be seated, gentlemen," he said. "I'm sorry things are a little... different... but the king hopes you will bear with it until matters can be more suitably organized."
Said the head merchant.
"The king,"
repeated Once. His voice sounded one dribble away from madness.
"Oh, the king, right," said the merchant.
From where he was sitting, he had a good view of the big hanging thing. The first course was soup with dumplings in it.
"The king graciously desires it to be known," said Once, "that it would be pleased to receive coronation gifts from the population at large, simply any precious metals or gems they might have by them and can easily spare. Such generosity, of course, should be an entirely voluntary act."
"And these entirely voluntary tributes we are about to make, they go?"
asked the head assassin.
"On the hoard," said Once.
The next course was fat pork, beans and floury potatoes, more, as they couldn't help noticing, fattening food. Once had a glass of water.
"Now, I wish to discuss a matter of some delicacy, which I'm sure that well-travelled, broad-minded gentlemen such as yourselves will have no difficulty in accepting," he said.
The hand holding the glass was beginning to shake. He paused and looked at them.
"I am referring," said Once, each word coming slowly to the surface like bubbles in some quicksand, "to the matter of the king's diet."
There was a terrible silence.
"Diet,"
said the head thief in a hollow voice.
"Yes,"
said Once. The silence grew and took on a texture.
Said the head merchant.
How often is the king hungry?
All the time, said Once. But it eats once a month. It's really a ceremonial occasion.
Of course, said the head merchant. It would be.
The whole essence of the king's feeding is that it should be, well, an act of bonding between king and subjects.
Are we talking about young maidens here?
The head thief almost choked on the words. Sheer prejudice, said Once. The age is immaterial. Marital status is, of course, of importance, and social class. Something to do with flavour, I believe. He leant forward. Please consider it, he hissed urgently. After all, just one a month. And when you think of all the alternatives...
Once sat alone in the dark, ruined hall, waiting.
Rise.
Once jerked to his feet.
Come.
Once lurched across the floor. The dragon brought its head around until it was a few inches in front of Once's face.
What does voluntary mean?
It means doing something of your own free will, said Once.
But they have no free will. They will increase my hoard, or I will flame them,
Once gulped.
Yes, he said, but you mustn't...
The silent roar of fury spun him around.
There is nothing I mustn't.
No, no, no,
squeaked Once, clutching his head.
I didn't mean that, believe me.
He put his hands behind his back.
"They'll do it of their own free will," he said. "In fact,"
said Once, trying to keep the trembling out of his voice,
"before too long, if someone comes along and tells them that a Dragon King is a bad idea, they'll kill him themselves."
The dragon blinked.
"I know people, you see," said Once simply. "And they really act like this?"
"Oh, yes, all the time. It's a basic human trait."
There will be no mighty warriors sent to kill me,
it thought, almost plaintively.
I don't think so. No heroes? Not any more. But I will be eating people,
Once whimpered.
Can I?
Once hesitated.
Can I ask you a question?
Ask.
You don't... need to eat people, surely. You see, he added, his voice speeding up to a gabble, something less controversial, like a cow might...
Need! Need! The dragon roared. Isn't it the tradition that the finest flower of womanhood should be sent to the dragon to ensure peace and prosperity?
Of course,
Once managed.
Now get out of my sight!
Once sagged. As it left his mind. The watch were contemplating life without the captain. Say what you liked about Captain Vimes, he'd had style. Now the night had come. They were going to have to go out onto the streets. It was 6 o'clock, and all wasn't well.
I miss Errol, too, said Carrot.
It's not as though we could leave anything around, either, said Colon. I mean, even the lamp oil... Even drank 2 gallons of lamp oil.
And mothballs, said Nobby. He ate a whole box of mothballs. And the kettle.
There was a hammering on the door. A couple of members of the palace guard were waiting with arrogant impatience.
We've flung you a proclamation, said one of them. You've got to...
What's all that fresh paint on your breastplate? Said Carrot politely.
Nobby and the sergeant peered around him.
It's... A dragon,
said the younger of the guards.
Here. I know you, said Nobby. You're Scully Maltoon. Used to live in Mincing Street. Your mum made cough sweets, didn't she, and fell in the mixture and died. I'll never have a cough sweet, but I think of your mum.
Hello, Nobby,
said the guard without enthusiasm.
This here is a proclamation what you are commanded to read. Said the guard loudly, and post up on street corners also, by order.
Whose? Said Nobby.
Sergeant Colon grabbed the scroll in one ham-like fist.
Whereas, he read slowly, it hath he pleased
the the dragon.
He lapsed into the tortured silence of academia.
No, he said at last. That's not right, is it? It's not going to eat someone.
You catch on fast,
said the guard. Carrot peered over Colon's shoulder.
What's a virgin?
He said. An unmarried girl, said Colon quickly.
What? Like my friend Reet?
Said Carrot, horrified. Well, no, said Colon.
She's not married, you know.
The guard stepped back out of rage of Carrot's rising wrath and hurried off.
Dragon on your vest, Nobby shouted after them. If your old mum knew about this, she'd turn in her vat.
Lady Ramkin ran her hands over Errol's body.
Damned if I know what's going on in there, she said. What's he been eating?
Last thing I think was a kettle, said Vimes. Errol grinned weakly at him and belched. You know what I think? You know you said they can rearrange their digestive system, said Vimes.
Oh, yes, to take advantage
of whatever they can find to make flame with, said Vimes. Yes. I think he's trying to make some sort of very hot flame. He wants to challenge the big dragon. Anyway, I can't leave him down there. It's not as if we need to find out where the dragon is now, he added bitterly.
I think you're being a bit silly about all this, she said, leading the way back to the house.
Silly? I was sacked in front of all those people.
Yes, but it was all a misunderstanding, I'm sure.
I reckon this damn city and the dragon just about deserve one another, said Vimes.
Oh.
She seemed deflated.
Well, if you're sure. If you need any help, you've only got to say.
I'm considering one or two offers, said Vimes gruffly. Lady Ramkin twisted her handkerchief round and round in her hands.
I expect you'll be wanting to be off then.
Yeah, well, goodbye then.
Goodbye, Captain Vimes.
He stumbled out of the door and walked hurriedly down the dark overgrown path. He stood still in the darkness. He stared at nothing. Suddenly he was thinking of a running man. And further back in the fuddled mists of his life, a boy running to keep up. And under his breath he said, "Any of them get out?" The librarian knuckled out into the library of the here and now. Every hair of his body bristled with rage. He pushed open the door and swung out into the stricken city. Someone out there was about to find that their worst nightmare was a maddened librarian with a badge.
"I wonder who it will be," said Nobby.
"What?" said Carrot.
"The sacrifice, I mean."
"I'm sure a hero will turn up in time," said Carrot, "with some new sort of weapon or something, and strike at its vulnerable spot."
There was a silence of sudden intense listening.
"What's one of them?" said Nobby.
"A spot where it's vulnerable. My grandad used to tell me stories. It a dragon in its vulnerables, he said, and you've killed it."
"And where's the spot like?"
"On a different place on each dragon."
"You know," said Nobby, "you always told me you used to win prizes for archery in the army, Sergeant. You said you had a lucky arrow."
"All right, but this isn't the same thing, is it? Anyway, I'm not a hero. Besides, what if I miss?"
"Look on the bright side," said Nobby. "You'll probably never know it."
Lupine Once padded along the draughty corridors to the patrician's bedroom. He shut the door behind him for a semblance of privacy. Then he knelt down in the centre of the floor and prized up a board. A long black robe was dragged into view. He rummaged still further. Then he lay down and stuck both arms into the gap and flailed desperately. A book sailed across the room and hit him in the back of the head. "Looking for this, were you?" said Vimes. He stepped out of the shadows. Once was on his knees, his mouth opening and shutting.
"Okay," he said. "Clever of you to guess."
"Under the floorboards," Vimes said. "First place anyone had look. Rather foolish, that was."
"I know. I suppose he didn't think anyone would be searching,"
said Once.
I'm sorry, said Vimes pleasantly.
Vetinari. You know how he was for scheming and things. Obviously he called it up and couldn't control it. Something even more cunning than he was.
So, what were you doing? Said Vimes.
I wondered if it might be possible to reverse the spell.
He took a few steps closer.
Look, about your job. If you want it back, there'll be no prob...
Run, said Vimes softly.
What?
Run. I want to see you run.
I don't understand.
I saw someone run away the night the dragon flamed that house. I remember thinking at the time that he moved in a funny way, sort of bounding along. And then the other day I saw you running away from the dragon. Could almost have been the same man, I thought. Skipping, almost. Any of them get out, Once?
You've got no proof at all, whispered Once.
Of course I haven't. The way someone runs, the eager tone of voice, that's all. And you can't give me my job back, said Vimes. It was never yours to take away. I was an officer of the law.
But you can help me, said Once urgently. There may be a way to destroy the dragon, do you see?
The dragon's here, Vimes snapped. You brought it here, and we're stuck with it, you
bastard! What's he going to do?
Once said. Vimes didn't know.
That's the trouble with people like you, said Once, getting up.
You never have any proper plans of your own.
Guards! Guards!
He grinned maniacally at Vimes. Four of the palace guards padded in, swords drawn.
Throw him in the special dungeon,
shrieked Once. The palace guard said nothing, but marched Vimes down across the ruined hall and through the wreckage of another corridor to an ominous door. They opened it, threw him in, and marched away. And no one, absolutely no one, noticed the thin, leaf-like thing that floated gently down from the shadows of the roof. It was a peanut shell. It was the silence that awoke Lady Ramkin. She stamped along to Errol's pen.
"Well, now, my lad,"
she began and stopped. Errol was stretched out on his side. A thin plume of grey smoke was drifting from his mouth, and his stomach expanded and contracted like a bellows. Errol was so cold he burnt. There was the distant sound of a knock at the front door of the house. The first light of dawn showed her the silhouette of a guardsman on her doorstep. Lady Ramkin bit her lip in panic, fled across the lawn, and dived into the house, taking the stairs three at a time. Working by feel and memory in the gloom, she found her best wig and rammed it on her head. Somewhere among the ointments and dragon remedies on her dressing table was something called, as far as she could remember, Dew of the Night. She applied some and hurried back down the stairs.
"Why, Captain Vimes," she said winsomely at the door, "this is a... Who the hell are you?"
The head of the palace guard took several steps backwards, and because he was of peasant stock, made a few surreptitious signs to ward off evil spirits.
"You've got a summons for Lady Sybil Ramkin,"
said the guard uncertainly. Her voice was withering.
"What do you mean? A summons?" "To attend the palace, you see."
Lady Ramkin straightened up and eyed the row of guards appearing behind him.
"I see," she said coldly. "That's the way, is it? Very well. You will, of course, allow me to fetch a coat."
She slammed the door. Lady Ramkin reappeared. The captain got a brief, blurred vision of her bounding through the doorway, screaming, and it might well have been the last thing he remembered if a guard hadn't had the presence of mind to trip her up as she hurtled down the steps.
"Bloody hell," he said in a voice of mixed horror and respect. "And the dragon wants to eat her?"
"Fetch the bell," said the captain. "She's got to be the highest-born lady in the city. I don't know about a maiden," he added.
After a while, Vimes could make out the walls of the dungeon. At the far end, a small grill high on the wall let in a mere suspicion of grubby second-hand light. He crept cautiously along one damp wall,
wondering where the rhythmic scraping sound was coming from. He rounded a squat pillar and found out. The patrician was shaving, squinting into a scrap of mirror propped against the pillar. No, Vimes realized. Not propped. Supported, in fact. By a rat. The patrician nodded to him without apparent surprise.
Oh, he said. Vimes, isn't it? I heard you were on the way down. Jolly good. You'd better tell the kitchen staff.
And here Vimes realized that the man was speaking to the rat,
that there will be two for lunch. Very well, Scrup. You may go.
You're waited on by rats, said Vimes.
We help each other out, you know.
Vimes paced the length of the dungeon and checked the door. It was heavily barred and bolted, and the lock was massive. Do guards come in here? He demanded.
Hardly ever, said the patrician.
They're bound to come in and check, though, said Vimes hopefully.
Oh, I don't think we should tolerate that, said the patrician.
How are you going to prevent them? Lord Veterinary gave him a pained look.
My dear Vimes, he said, I thought you were an observant man. Did you look at the door?
Vimes glared at the door. It was one of the popular dread portal variety, all bars and bolts and iron spikes and massive hinges. He stared at the door until his eyebrows ached, and then he saw what he'd been looking at all along. In this dungeon, the patrician could hold off the world. All that was on the outside was the lock. All the bolts and bars were on the inside. The rank clambered awkwardly across the damp rooftops. Sergeant Colon looked around at the forest of chimneys. "We're just above Jimkin Bearhugger's whiskey distillery," he said. He knelt down and unwrapped the long sacking package he'd been carrying. This revealed a longbow of ancient design and a quiver of arrows. He picked up the bow slowly, reverentially.
"You know," he said quietly, "I was damn good with this when I were a lad."
"Now you pass me an arrow, Nobby." "Not that one. That's my lucky arrow," he spluttered. "That's the one I shall use for the Ashiel Wasname, the coup de grace. If that dragon's got any vulnerables, that arrow'll find 'em."
He looked around the rooftops with a speculative eye. He pulled the bowstring back to his ear and grunted. "See the roof of the Assassin's Guild over there?" They peered through the grubby air.
"Right then," he wheezed. "Do you see the weather vane on it? Do you see it?"
"That's a long way off, Sarge," said Nobby doubtfully.
"Never mind me. You keep an eye on the weather vane,"
groaned the sergeant. They nodded.
"Right. Right,"
said the sergeant, swaying backwards and forwards with the effort.
"Right,"
he grunted and loosed the arrow. After a while, Nobby wandered to the edge of the roof and pointed downwards.
"There's a pond just there," he said. "I mean, it's pretty deep. So after the sergeant has shot at the dragon, we can jump in it, what do you say?"
"Oh, we don't need to do that," said Carrot, "because the sergeant's lucky arrow would have hit the vulnerable spot and the dragon'll be dead."
"Granted, granted," said Nobby
hurriedly, looking at Colon's scowling face.
"But just in case, you know, if by a million to one chance he misses, if by incredible bad luck he doesn't quite manage to hit the vulnerable dead on, then your dragon is going to lose his rag, right? And it's probably a good idea to not be here. Call me a worrywart if you like, that's all I'm saying."
"When you really need them the most," said Colon haughtily, "million to one chances always crop up. Well-known fact." "Sergeant is right, Nobby," said Carrot virtuously.
"And it's a good job we've got a last desperate million-to-one chance to rely on, or we'd really be in trouble."
"Oh, yes," said Nobby sadly. "Lucky old us."
Vimes wedged another knife in a crack in the stones and tested his weight carefully, while Lord Veterinary looked on with interest. He'd managed to get 6 feet off the floor and up to a level with the grill. Now he started to hack at the mortar around the bars. The mortar was half-rotted, but the bars had been driven deep into the rock. He hacked at the mortar anyway, and then stopped as something small and pale fell down outside quite slowly.
"Peanut shell?" he said.
The librarian's face appeared upside down in the barred opening, and gave him a grin that wasn't any less terrible for being the wrong way up. The orangutan flopped down off the wall, grabbed a couple of bars, and pulled. Muscles shunted back and forward across its barrel chest. The mouthful of yellow teeth gaped in silent concentration. There were a couple of dull thungs as the bars gave up and broke free. The ape flung them aside and reached into the gaping hole. Then the longest arms of the law grabbed the astonished Vimes under his shoulders and pulled him through in one movement. Vimes picked himself up off the greasy cobbles and stared at the librarian. The librarian thrust a tattered piece of parchment under his nose. Vimes read the words. "It hath he pleased, whereas at the stroke of noony, a maiden pure, yet high-born, compact between ruler and ruled," he grabbed the librarian by two handfuls of chest hair and pulled him up to eye height. "What time is it?" he shouted. A long red-haired arm unfolded itself upwards towards the sun. "I'm not bloody well going to have it, understand?" Vimes shouted, shaking the ape back and forth. The librarian pointed out patiently. "What? Oh, sorry." Vimes lowered the ape, who wisely didn't make an issue of it. Vimes noticed a narrow, grubby door and kicked it open. The librarian trailed along behind, swinging on his knuckles. The kitchen on the other side of the door was almost deserted. Vimes rummaged through the debris until he came up with a cleaver. Then he hurried out again, into the big cobbled area that surrounded the palace. Carrot looked down at the plaza below them. "Oh, bloody hell," he said softly.
"What's that?"
said Colon urgently, looking around.
"They're chaining a woman to a rock."
The rank stared over the parapet. The huge and silent crowd that lined the plaza stared too, at a white figure struggling between half a dozen palace guards.
"Fine strapping wench, whoever she is,"
said Nobby approvingly, as one of the guards wheeled off bow-legged and collapsed.
"Got a mean right knee, so she has."
"Anyone we know?" said Colon.
Carrot squinted.
"It's Lady Rampkin," he said, his mouth dropping open.
"Never."
"He's right. In a nighty,"
said Nobby.
"The buggers."
Colon snatched up his bow and fumbled for an arrow.
"I'll give 'em vulnerables. Well-spoken lady like her. It's a disgrace."
Said Carrot, who had glanced over his shoulder.
"Sergeant."
"This is what it comes to," muttered Colon. "Right, you bastards, your geography."
"Sergeant," Carrot repeated urgently.
"It's history, not geography," said Nobby. "That's what you're supposed to say, history. Your history, you say."
"Sergeant!"
Nobby was looking behind them too.
"Oh, shit," he said. "Can't miss," muttered Colon, taking aim.
"Sergeant!"
"Shut up, you two. I can't concentrate."
"Sergeant! It's coming!"
The dragon accelerated. Colon's hand shook. The dragon seemed to be aiming at his throat, and it was moving too fast, far too fast.
"For the bloody thing!"
screamed Nobby.
"Picking my spot, lad, picking my spot," quavered Colon.
He paused as the nightmare bore down on him on wings of terror. And then the dragon wasn't approaching any more. It was there, passing a few feet overhead. Colon fired. They watched the arrow rise straight and true. Vimes half ran, half staggered over the damp cobbles. He stumbled to a halt and gasped for air, and thus he saw the figures on the rooftop.
"Oh, no," he thought. "What do they think they're playing at?"
The arrow bounced off a scale and clattered away into oblivion.
"It missed,"
Colon mouthed aghast.
The dragon twisted its wings, swung its huge bulk around on a pivot of air, and bore down on the roof. Carrot grabbed Nobby around the waist and laid a hand on Colon's shoulder. The dragon flamed. It went through the roof like butter. It punched through floor after floor and eventually reached the big copper vat containing 1,000 gallons of freshly made, mature, whiskey-type spirit. Fortunately, the chances of anyone surviving the ensuing explosion were exactly 1,000,000 to 1. The crowd watched in bemusement as the super-hot blast flung the dragon into the sky and barely noticed Vimes as he pushed his way, wheezing and crying, through the press of bodies. He stopped. A huge remnant of mortared masonry had been dragged into the centre of the plaza, and Lady Sybil Ramkin had been chained to it. She appeared to be wearing a nightie and huge rubber boots. She gave him a look of pure fury.
"You!" "You!"
He focused on the cleaver. It was a good steel cleaver, and the chains were elderly and rather rusty iron. He hacked away. At last, Lady Ramkin shook herself free. A ragged cheer went up and started to grow in volume. There was a sound behind Vimes. It was the click of 4 sets of talons hitting the flagstones at the same time. The cheering stopped abruptly. Vimes looked around and up. Soot clung to the dragon's hide. It lowered its head and tried to focus on Vimes. He felt Lady Ramkin's hand engulf his.
"Jolly well done," she said. "It nearly worked."
Out of the pond dripping slime rose Sergeant Colon. He clawed his way to the bank and pulled himself up like some sea-dwelling life-form. Nobby was already there, spread out like a frog leaking water. "Is that you, Nobby?" said Sergeant Colon anxiously.
"It's me, Sergeant."
"What about young Carrot?" he said. Nobby pushed himself up on his elbows groggily.
"Dunno,"
he said.
"I suppose," said Colon slowly, "he can swim." "Dunno, he never said."
They stared at the greasy grey surface.
"It was probably that protective," said Nobby. "Perhaps it filled with water and dragged him down."
Colon nodded gloomily.
"There isn't someone still in there, is there?" said Carrot behind them.
They looked around.
"I thought I'd better nip out quickly, see what was going on," he said brightly. "Oh," said Nobby weakly. "Jolly good." "There's no one around," said Carrot impatiently. He drew his sword. "Come on," he said. "Where to?" said Nobby.
"We want to fight the dragon, don't we?"
said Carrot. Colon gave Nobby a sheepish look.
"Young people today," he said.
The dragon kennels exploded. A great billow of black smoke poured out. Errol climbed above his own smoke and ascended into the skies of Ankh Morpork. Vimes, awaiting death on the plaza, realized that his mouth was hanging open. He shut it again. There was absolutely no sound in the city now but the noise of Errol's ascent. With a challenging roar of flame and a pummeling of air, the king of Ankh Morpork rose, all thought of mere humans forgotten. Flames roared into the space where Errol had been, but he wasn't there. The king tried to spin in mid-air. The little dragon circled in an easy series of smoke rings, weaving a cat's cradle in the sky, with the huge adversary gyrating helplessly in the middle. The crowd watched in breathless silence.
"Hello, Captain,"
said an ingratiating voice. Vimes looked down. A small and stagnant pond, disguised as Nobby, grinned sheepishly up at him. "I thought you were dead," he said.
"We're not,"
said Nobby. "Oh, good." Vimes looked back up. Errol balanced on his flame. He seemed to be thinking. Then he nonchalantly kicked his back legs out, somersaulted, and fled. For a moment he was visible as a silver streak, and then he was out over the city walls and gone. A groan followed him. It came from 10,000 throats.
"I've never seen that before," said Lady Ramkin. "Dragons normally fight to the death."
"At last they've bred one who's sensible," said Vimes morosely. "Let's be honest. The chances of a dragon the size of Errol beating something that big are 1,000,000 to 1.
The rank looked at one another.
"Million to one?"
asked Carrot nonchalantly. "Definitely," said Vimes.
"Million to one."
Sergeant Colon took a deep breath.
"But it might just work," he said.
"What are you talking about?" snapped Vimes. Nobby nudged him and pointed out across the plains. Vimes squinted. Running ahead of a column of black smoke, speeding over the cabbage fields and closing fast, was a silvery bullet. The great dragon had seen it too. It flamed defiance and climbed for extra height. Now Errol's flame was visible, so hot as to be almost blue.
"Errol's going to hit it," Vimes thought. "God help us all, it'll be a fireball."
Errol passed silently over the city walls, nose up, wings folded down to tiny flaps, his body honed to a mere cone with a flame at one end. And then he was gone, speeding out towards the sea in the same eerie silence.
"He missed,"
Nobby began. The air ruptured. An endless thunderclap of noise dragged across the city, smashing tiles, toppling chimneys. Vimes saw the creature flame desperately as it turned and became the centre of a spiral of crazy fire. It screamed like a distressed foghorn. Then the dragon landed. It ploughed through a debris of beams and thatch. Finally it came to rest, almost invisible under a heap of former architecture. Then people started to move. All of them had one aim in mind.
"You've got to stop them! You can't let them kill it!" said Lady Ramkin.
Vimes blinked at her.
"Pardon?" he said. "It's wounded!"
"Lady, that was the intention, wasn't it?" Sergeant Colon sidled up.
"You'd better come at once, Captain," he said. "It's going to be bloody murder. It's Carrot. He's arrested the dragon."
There was a pause.
"He was up on the rubble like a shot, sir. Grabbed it by the wing and said, 'You're nicked chummy, sir.'"
Vimes shouldered his way through the dense crowd, staring at the bulky figure atop the mound of rubble and dragon. Carrot turned slowly. His gaze was like a lighthouse beam. Where it fell, the crowd lowered their weapons and looked merely sullen and uncomfortable.
"I must warn you," Carrot went on, "that interfering with an officer in the execution of his duty is a serious offence."
A stone bounced off the back of his helmet. There was a barrage of jeers.
"We don't want guards ordering us about."
"Quis custodiet custod?"
"Yeah, right."
Vimes pulled the sergeant towards him. "Go and organise some rope. Lots of rope as thick as possible." Colon peered at him. "You serious, sir? We really going to arrest it? Do it." Carrot half raised his club in a threatening gesture as Vimes climbed up the rubble pile.
"Oh, hello, Captain Vimes," he said. "I have to report I've arrested this..."
"Yeah, I'll see," said Vimes.
"I have to read it. It's right, sir,"
said Carrot. A lump of rock ricocheted off his breastplate.
"Who did that?"
The voice lashed out like a whip. The crowd went quiet. Sybil Ramkin scrambled up on the wreckage, eyes afire, and glared furiously at the mob.
"If the person who did that does not own up, I shall be extremely angry. Shame on you all."
She had their full attention. Several people holding stones and things let them drop quietly to the ground. Carrot pulled out his notebook and glared at the dragon. He addressed the stunned reptile.
"It is my duty to warn you that you are to be reported for consideration of prosecution on some or all of the following counts, to wit, one, little one, that on or about the 18th of Groon last, in a place known as Sweetheart Lane the Shades, you did unlawfully vent flame in a manner likely to cause grievous bodily harm, in contravention of Clause 7 of the Industrial Processes Act 1508, and that one, little two..."
"I think we should hurry up," whispered Vimes. "Is all this necessary?"
"Well, I believe one can summarise," said Carrot, "in exceptional circumstances."
It was at this point that Errol came back over the rooftops in a series of minor explosions, leaving a trail of smoke rings. He was also wailing like a foghorn. Vimes grabbed Carrot and stumbled down the heap as the king started to scrabble desperately to get free.
"'He's come back for the kill!' he shouted. Now Errol was hovering over the fallen dragon. The great dragon stuck its head up in a cascade of plaster dust. It opened its mouth, but instead of the lance of white fire, it merely made a noise like a kitten. The huge creature got unsteadily to its feet.
"'You're letting it get up!' Vime shouted. "'You're not supposed to let it get up, Errol!'
"'No. Wait a minute!' said Lady Ramkin, laying a hand on his arm. "'I'm not sure we haven't got hold of the wrong end of the stick here.' The great dragon started to rise. It climbed in a wide spiral, gathering speed as it did so. Errol went with it, orbiting the huge body like a tug around a liner. "'It's as though he's bussing over it,' said Vimes. Vimes felt Lady Ramkin's gaze on the back of his neck. Realisation dawned. "'Oh,' he said. Lady Ramkin nodded. "'Really?' said Vimes.
"'Yes,' she said. "'I really ought to have thought of it before. "'It was such a hot flame, of course.'
"'Why don't you fight the bastard?' shouted Nobby at the dwindling dragons.
"'Bitch, Nobby,' said Vimes quietly. "'Not bastard. Bitch.
"'Why don't you
"'What?'
"'It's a member of the female gender,' explained Lady Ramkin.
"'What?'
"'It's a girl,' translated Lady Ramkin.
"'But it's sodding enormous,' said Nobby.
Vimes coughed urgently. Nobby's rodent eyes slid sideways to Sybil Ramkin, who blushed like a sunset.
Fine figure of a dragon, I mean, he said quickly.
Wide, egg-bearing hips, said Sergeant Colon anxiously.
Statue skew,
Nobby added fervently.
Shut up, said Vimes. You men, come with me. Come on, hurry. Where are we going, sir?
Colon managed.
To the palace. Any of you still got a sword? You can use mine, Captain, said Carrot.
Lupine Once scurried along the ruined corridors of the palace, the summoning of dragons under one arm, the glittering royal sword grasped uncertainly in one hand. Someone was following him. He'd seen Vetinari walking through the palace, yet he knew the man was securely put away. Once gibbered a bit, fumbled with the door handle beside him, and darted in. He opened his eyes. He was in the old private audience room. The patrician was sitting in his old seat, one leg crossed on the other.
"'Ah, Once,' he said.
Once jumped, scrabbled at the door handle, leapt into the corridor, and ran for it until he reached the main staircase. He ran up the stairs three at a time. The upper floor sprang and wobbled like a trampoline as Once scurried across it. He struggled to the nearest door. He slammed it behind him. This was one of the upper staterooms, bare now and lacking its fourth wall. Where it should have been was just the gulf of the cavern. The patrician stepped out of the shadows. Once spun around, sword raised.
You can't stop me. I've got some magic stuff left. I've got... the book, he gibbered. I'll bring back another one. You'll see.
I urge you not to, said Lord Vetinari mildly.
Oh, you think you're so clever, but I'll have you know, said Once triumphantly. I've got the palace guards on my side, so it's back to the cells for you, he said. Guards! Guards!
There was the clatter of running feet outside.
Take him away, screamed Once. Fetch more scorpions! Put him in!
Put the sword down, said Vimes.
Once stared at the rank in disbelief.
"'Ah, Vimes,' said the patrician. "'You will shut up,' said Vimes calmly.
"'Lance Constable Carrot?'
"'Sir?'
"'Read the prisoner his rights.'
"'Yes, sir,'
Carrot produced his notebook.
"'Lupine Once,' he said, "'a.k.a. Lupin Squiggle Secky P.P.'
"'What?' said Once.
"'It is my duty to inform you,' that you've been arrested and will be charged with...
Carrot gave Vimes an agonised look.
A number of offences of murder by means of a blunt instrument, to wit a dragon. You have the right not to be summarily thrown into a piranha tank. You have the...
This is madness, said the patrician calmly.
Take him down to the cells.
Once made no signal. There was no scream or cry. He just rushed at the patrician, sword raised. It was a total mystery to Vimes why he chose to dart forward, bringing Carrot's sword.